You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Days Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about, is it love? How do you know? How do you know if you're in a healthy relationship? Is it lust and attachment, or is it attraction? And what is consummate love?
What is that?
Consummate love, what is it? Is it the ultimate type of love? Is it the three-dimensional love that we're looking for? We can't have two-dimensional loves anymore. We need three dimensions, right? And maybe four at some point, right? Because a three-dimensional love that lasts the test of time puts love in the fourth dimension. So let's get going on this. We wanted to know, what is love? I mean, we talk about it all the time, 90-day soulmate. You know, how do you know you're in love? And we ask ourselves that question, how do people think about love and how do they feel about it? And so we looked at some studies, psychological studies, and we did some reading, and we found here are seven things that let you know you're in a loving relationship.
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Let's see. Number one, how do you know? You're constantly thinking about them, and you get a dopamine reward. And we're going to stop on each of these things. So when you think about them, you feel pleasure. You know, so you get a little bit of, you feel better, you feel calmer. you get a dopamine reward. And that is the number one thing, is when you think of the person you love, you actually feel good about it. If you think about the person you love and you're ambivalent or you're angry, okay, you could be momentarily angry. But generally speaking, if you're thinking about that person that you believe you love and you feel better, you feel happy, that could be love.
Maybe you're in love.
Mm-hmm. Number two, that the person that you're with, you're actually trying to seek friend and family approval, meaning you're not embarrassed to bring them to meet your family, right? Or you have no problem going out with your friends and bringing them along.
Yeah.
So, you know, the opposite would be is if you're embarrassed to bring them home, or if you're not wanting to, quote, show them off, well, maybe it's not love.
But it's relative.
Yeah, it's relative. Maybe you're embarrassed about your friends and your family.
Yeah, so you don't want to show your love.
Who knows? You know, I tried to bring my girlfriend home, but Lisette, oops.
I joke because with my friend, you remember that I introduced you, but I don't want to say that we were almost married.
So, we've been married for a year. Now you're introducing
me. Yeah, exactly. So it's not like I feel embarrassed. It's different. History.
Different. Okay, number three. What's number three? You feel pride and you share joy in their achievements. So you're actually very happy about when they're doing something successfully, if they're doing something good, if they just ran in a 5K and they placed in the top 10, and you're like, oh, I feel so happy.
No, sorry, I believe that when you admire, it's part of love. Mm-hmm. So I admire you, so I know that I love you. Yeah.
So this is despite your own maybe failing at the same thing. So say you and your loved one were in a race, and you couldn't finish it, instead of feeling bad about yourself, well, you're happy about what they accomplished. So it's basically seeing them not above you, but not dwelling on your own failure, but reveling in, hey, let's celebrate your success.
Yeah.
And that was one of the points. Let's go number four. Reciprocal liking is essential for deeper love. You gotta like each other. You're talking about admire. You can admire somebody because of their success or of what they've accomplished, but you just honestly like them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like how they treat other people?
Yeah.
Do you like how they treat your friends? Do you like how they treat your family? Do you like how they treat the waiter or waitress or a dog or a cat? Do you like them? And it's mm-hmm. reciprocal liking. Do they like you? So that is a compatibility thing.
Somebody
right?
say, I don't like how treat, but I'm in love with this person.
Yeah, I don't like how they treat other people, but I just can't be without
them. But with me, it's amazing.
They treat me so well.
Yeah. Be careful.
Let's see what we've got next. Oh, this is good. When they go away, it feels like a part of you is missing, and that shows you have deep attachment. So when you miss them, when they are traveling for work, they're going, even they go to the store for 15 minutes, you're like, oh, I can't wait for them to come back, you know?
Because I'm hungry. Yeah.
So, that's good.
Sorry.
That's hunger.
Yeah.
Which is similar
love,
thing, right?
Love is for
hunger,
the stomach.
Hunger,
yeah.
Love. Sometimes
remember
people...
Remember the show the last week about the bacteria?
The bacteria in the
so
stomach.
So that is love.
When your bacteria are missing your partner, that's love. Well, there's something to be said about that. We'll talk about that more later. How about you have an expanded self-concept, new traits, and they are a positive influence, or actually you're a positive influence on each other.
On each other, yeah.
Right? So if you see that you are developing new things in your life with your partner, you're maybe going new places, you're discovering new material, new ideas, and you're sharing them, and you now have new traits, new knowledge, and you feel like, wow, they're a positive influence on me, and I'm a positive
also
influence on them.
Sharing some kind of hobby, maybe both is hiking together, or both is play Lego, like we do Lego together. So that is something that is interesting.
Hiking together in the same direction, mm-hmm. not hiking together in different directions. No, okay. And then how about lastly on here, healthy jealousy shows commitment without distrust. Meaning, if you have a healthy jealousy, you could be jealous that they're not here right now because they had to spend time going to a sales meeting somewhere, or had to go play baseball with their buddies, or needed to go and hang out to somebody, go to a graduation, or something where you couldn't go. And you may feel jealous of the time that they spent away, but there's not a distrust or a mistrust. Yes. So it's a healthy jealousy.
You call every
like,
5 minutes.
Where are you?
Where are
Text.
You?
When are you coming home? No, that's not love. So let's continue on. So now you have these feelings. You have all these things that you think. And you think, okay, I love this person. Is it a healthy relationship?
Depend.
Is it unhealthy?
Depend.
So let's look at signs that you are in a healthy relationship.
Okay.
Here are a couple. Number one, that they are loving, caring, and kind to you. They communicate and connect with you, that they are able to deeply communicate and clearly communicate. They're open and honest. They're emotionally mature. They've got high levels of emotional intelligence. They're patient, not only with you, but with others, but especially with you, because this is a relationship here. They're calm and stable. They respect boundaries. They don't push too hard or too far in sensitive areas for you. They're willing to listen. Oh, I just threw that in there. Acknowledge others, that it's not all about them. They acknowledge it's about you. It's about your sister or your cousin. It's about fellow people in life.
Mm-hmm.
They're effective at apologizing and know when to say that they are sorry. As well as they are focused and on target with life, meaning they're telling you what they're doing, they're focused on what they're doing together with you, and they're following through. So that's healthy. That's a healthy relationship.
Yeah, so the open and honest for me is really key in relationship, because if you don't trust the person that you live, is a stressful relationship,
right.
It's not healthy, yeah.
So if you want to see what the opposite of a healthy relationship looks like, let's look at the opposite of all those, the interplay between two people in an unhealthy relationship. Number one, gaslighting. Not only do they lie to you, but they double down on the lie, and then they accuse you of whatever that act is. So I think one is like you think they're you think they're going out with somebody, and you're like, hey, did you go out with this person? And instead of them saying yes, no, they're like, why are you spying on me? You know, it's a continuation of the lie by not answering, by accusing you. So the gaslight is to push the lie even further. Lies to control, that's number two. They lie to control. So they may make them out themselves to be a victim to control you. They create a false reality. Look at that. And they play the victim. Again, they do it twice. Not only do it before, but they do it now. They give you the silent treatment.
What is that?
You never get the silent treatment from me? Maybe once in a while. No, the silent treatment is, say you're in the midst of, you're upset at them. Mm-hmm. And instead of them having the conversation and discussing open and honestly with you, openly and honestly, the problem and the situation, they just shut down and they won't talk to you about it. They make you feel bad. They make you have to crawl back and have the discussion and say you're sorry. Even though they're the one that's in the wrong, right?
Play the control part.
Right. Yes. How about this? And in doing so, they hold your feelings hostage, meaning you can't actually have your feelings because they don't allow you to express them. But after it's all said and done, they do love bombing. Love bombing is say, oh, here are the flowers, and I'll take you out to dinner, and you're so wonderful, and here's a new dress, here are new sneakers, let's go to a show, let's go on vacation, right? All this loving stuff. So after doing all this horrible stuff, they do love bombing, and this is a manipulation, a form of manipulation, coercion.
The concept of relationship that you have to watch up yourself. If you have one of these, maybe the people lie.
Well, but going back and forth and back and forth, maybe they go, oh, it's the drama. I love the drama. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the control, is that it's a mind control. It's using, I guess, some of our natural senses that I feel like distant, and then they overwhelm me, and now I feel so close. And it's this the extremes of this passion. And then maybe I don't have that in a relationship, and I say, hey, there's something missing. And then I want to go back to that passion. Because I see that's passion, that's love.
And also believe they have sometimes better sex when you have this kind of drama, and then you feel that you're missing, and then we are together, and then you have like the last sex, you know, and then break up.
Go
back. So it creates, your brain creates patterns, say that is love. Who knows,
right? That's true. What else do we have here? Isolation. So they isolate you from your family and friends. Why are you talking to your friends about our relationship? Why are you talking to our family? I don't want you go visiting them. Every time you go visit them, you come back here with these silly ideas, and they're nothing but bad for you. And you and me, we are together, and we love each other, and you got to stay away, or I'm going to get really angry. And then I buy you dinner. Oh, let's go out to dinner.
Again.
And now what do I do? What do I do?
So it's important to figure out, and that is critical, because depending on the family, some families is so attaching, you know, and some couple I see that they sometimes put more value your brothers and sister and cousin versus your partner or your child. So this kind of the not put everybody in the right position. And it's organized, you know, so relationship need to have some order. If you don't have this order, you can destroy your relationship.
Number one order is me with you. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it goes
the
out.
The kids, and then your parents, and you, because also I see family, they bring the mama or the father and living together, and sometimes it create issues.
That is true. And as we just started this thing off with, what does it, when you're in love, what do you want to do? You want to introduce your partner to your friends and family. And if your partner wants to isolate you from your friends and family, that's the exact opposite.
Opposite too,
right?
Yeah.
The opposite of feeling like you're in love.
You don't have to go here or here. Yeah. You need to balance.
You want to have a connection. What else do we have here? They, in an unhealthy relationship, one of the two people will act superior and make the other one feel inferior. And number 10, that they are everything, that together with them, you have value with them and only with them. And without them, you have nothing. And that's unhealthy.
really.
But it's like, you know, hey, together we're wonderful, and I'm so good, and you need me, and without me you'd have nothing, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that? Let's go out to dinner. But don't talk to your parents. Don't talk to your sister.
You either.
Okay. Never mind. I won't talk to your sister anymore. Fine.
I have sisters.
Well, that would make it kind of difficult, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what are the symptoms of love? What are some of the chemical, physical symptoms of love? Early on in love, you have euphoria, dependency, sweaty palms, butterflies. And those would be the chemical-induced symptoms. Now, the physical symptoms, like the things you would see, is you see acts of affection, holding hands, hugging, cuddling, kissing, and all those things release stress and pain. You get oxytocin release. It will boost the bonding in the relationship, as well as it will reduce stress. Endorphin surge is a natural pain relief and mood enhancer.
Mm.
And finally, it will lower the cortisol. The cortisol in your body will be lowered by these acts of affection, which will reduce stress hormone levels significantly. Well, actually, that is the stress hormone. If caressing does this is a sign of a symptom of love, is that when you have that connection, the physical caressing helps create the bond, as well as it creates a calmness in your relationship. It's very strong. So what are the stages of love? And we've talked about this in the past.
Yeah.
We'll go through it really quickly. Number one, the number one stage of love is lust, which typically, you know, when we're in our youth, this is when lust is strongest because we have the most hormones running around, coursing through our veins. We're driven by sexual desire. We're fueled by testosterone and estrogen, the two main hormones of humans, testosterone and estrogen. And when those are surging through our veins, we have desire for the opposite sex, or we have desire for whom we're attracted to, right? Yeah. The attraction piece is we get heightened, the second step of after the lust, we have this heightened interest and infatuation. So we go from the sex drive to this, oh, I don't know what it's called. It's almost like an obsession with being with the person. It's infatuation. It's driven by dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin, which is interesting because we talked about some of the bacteria involved in the production of serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
So eating well is a good aspect of needing to build this attraction. But there's something that happens during an attraction that may cause us not to eat well. And then lastly, attachment happens later when you get a deep bond and long-term connection, which is mediated by the oxytocin and vasopressin in our lives. So there's these stages which go from lust, which is really just sexual, and this is how humans are made, to attraction, which you start developing these oxytocin and other dopamine things that are happening within our body. And we're looking, it's a reward system. And then lastly, having done this for a while, we end up in this attachment state. And to go into it, the lust stage in a little bit more specific, the chemicals involved we talked about is testosterone and estrogen. The impacts, it increases the libido, sexual desire. The body impact is in the hypothalamus, which stimulates hormone production, affecting sexual organs, and then finally sets the stage for emotional attraction, which is that second stage. Attraction, emotional attraction, is now involving dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. It creates feelings of giddiness, energy, and infatuation. The brain is rewarded. Its pathways are activated, especially in the hypothalamus and ventral tegmental area, and leads to deeper emotional connection. And finally, we look at this, the attachment stage, where you have a strong lasting bond with long-term partner. Chemicals involved are oxytocin, vasopressin, promotes feelings of security, calmness and bonding. Again, security, calmness, and bonding. Hypothalamus releases hormones affecting the brain's bonding centers, and it helps to sustain long-term relationships and emotional stability. And again, the touching and caressing as being a indication of the response. When you touch and caress your partner, if you feel comfort, if you feel a reduction in strain and stress, it is a sign that there is love between you.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about love. What is it? How do we know we're in love? And ultimately, what is consummate love?
What is love?
So let's talk about the multiple ways. If you think you're in a relationship, there are multiple ways you can be in a relationship. Let's look at some of the ways. You can have liking. You like the person you're with. It's intimacy only. That means you communicate very closely with them. You probably discuss deep things with them. You feel like there's an emotional connection. Then there's infatuation, which is passion only. It's you just want to be with that person, and it's really, there's a lot of desire involved. And then lastly, empty love, which is commitment only. And we're going to go through all three of those things as being singularly dimensioned love. Then you have things that are combinations of love, like fatuous love, where you have passion and commitment, but no intimacy. You have companionate love, which is intimacy and commitment, but no passion. And then you have what we talked about before, consummate love, which is passionate, intimacy, and commitment. The three dimensions of love, passion, intimacy, and commitment. I think we're going to go right to that and kind of discuss what that is. What do you think?
Yeah.
So three dimensions of love, consummate love, passion, intimacy, and commitment. An example, a balanced, long-term marriage with deep affection and strong physical connection. It's the ideal form of love, encompassing all dimensions for a fulfilling relationship. So it's passion, like you really emotionally connected to the person. Intimacy, where you can talk about deep subjects and deep problems and
also
your future.
Be transparent, you know, when you have intimacy, is that nothing is between you and me.
Yeah. And then finally, the last part of that is the commitment, right? So you have the long-term commitment. So you've got the mental discussion at a deep level. You've got the physical connection and the passion and the emotion. And then you have the actual commitment.
And the commitment is something that I always say, you have to be commitment fair with yourself.
Mm.
So if I have my strong commitment to be in the relationship, I have to work on that. If you don't feel this commitment, you cannot be commitment with somebody.
And part of this is you were talking about the you asked me about this thing that you always talk about, dissonance, cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
So in consummate love, you have three things, right? You have the physical, emotional, and the commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those, if you have two of those things, if you have commitment, I've committed to being with Lizette forever, and I really, really like talking with her, then it's going to kind of force me to also be passionate with her. Because if I'm not passionate with her, then I have this cognitive dissonance. If something feels wrong. And we either then have to get back to having that passion, or it will break up the other things. And so you'll feel there's something wrong in that relationship when you're missing one of those three parts.
Mm-hmm. And you
right?
need to watch up yourself. Because
right?
you can maybe start to feeling something, but you don't pay attention. Maybe one of the three break.
So what happens to the brain in consummate love? You're in consummate love. You have all these things going on. You've got this really good bonding. What happens? Let's see what happens with the brain. Oh, look. In order to have consummate love, there are a couple of things that go on. You have neuroplasticity and shared life experiences. There's an effect of the brain. Your brain actually grows together. You have chemical interactions which foster commitment. And then there's something else, which is an esoteric or spiritual bond that's actually found in the brain. That's something that I thought of researching. Like, is there some kind of spiritual connection of soulmates? And is there any research that shows there's some kind of brain-based connection between them? And there is. So we're going to talk about that right now. Let's start with the neuroplasticity. That when you grow together, you strengthen the neural connection between each other. Research actually shows that couples who build a life together developed intertwined neural pathways. It enhances empathy and understanding. Now, weeks ago, if not months, that was something that we talked about. I talked about how we develop our shows together. And as we do, we discuss things back and forth. And we're actually creating one brain or a connection between our brain and all these neurons that never existed before until I met Lizette. And
for me, the same. And also we create more intimacy doing this kind of the yes. development topic. And we fascinate, and I have intellectual orgasm with you.
So something I would say with anybody out there is when you experience new things together with your partner and you discuss them and you discuss new information, new things, new lessons, new growth, you actually grow together in your brain and you intertwine your neurons. Even though you've got a physical separation, there is a communicative connection between two souls.
Yeah.
And we're only talking now physical. This is actual physically documented. And I guess with the research study I had up there was back in 2000, but it's been done multiple times, people following up on the same thing. It creates a deep connected interdependent relationship, and that's a mental intimate relationship. Yeah. Let's go on with that to the second thing, which was the chemical interactions and commitment, that the oxytocin and vasopressin play a key role. The cuddle hormone oxytocin and vasopressin increase during bonding activities, promoting long-term commitment. So when we are physical with each other, when we go to a restaurant and we're having a romantic dinner, these things are releasing these chemicals which bond us. It helps enhance trust, security, and attachment between partners.
I am acting, okay? It's not true.
And lastly, let's talk about the spiritual bond in the brain. There's a profound, possibly incomprehensible brain activity that has a spiritual connection. It's where part of our spiritual self lives. Some studies suggest mystical experiences in love, which involve unique brain regions such as the parietal, I guess that's how it's pronounced, cortex. And that Newberg and Waldman, 2009, have been talked about and researched by others. It creates a sense of eternal, transcendent connection beyond physical and emotional bonds. So when you feel you have a soul connection and it develops over time, there's also a part of your brain that's experiencing this as well. And that's what was being studied. So there is a spiritual brain piece that is also associated with your own spiritualness. So it can be amplified in the relationship. Right?
Right.
Right. Continuing on with our journey today. So chemical cautions. Oh, we have some chemical cautions. With all this chemistry happening, there's some things we got to be concerned about. And I'm going to go right into these things. Let's go into it. Number one, in a relationship where you are in the lust, attachment, and or attraction stages, not in that order, lust, attraction, and attachment, dopamine increases, which activates reward, desire, and addiction pathways, causing euphoric states. For example, you're feeling exhilarated when receiving a text message from your partner, and you're constantly seeking their presence, which potentially a danger can be, it can lead to obsessive behaviors or addiction-like dependency on the partner. A lot of times this happens early in a relationship. So when you're in the lust stage going into the attraction stage, you're getting all this dopamine flooding your brain. The dopamine flooding your brain is similar to what drugs can do. And so there's this addiction happening, like I'm waiting for my phone to get another text. I hear my phone text, I got to pick it up. Mm-hmm. That our phones are, you know, iPhone or Motorola or whatever is out there today. When you hear it buzz and you have to grab it to pick it up, there's also a, we've been trained, right? Mm-hmm. We've been trained to jump and get our phone.
Yeah, and this is other addiction.
It's an addiction.
Yeah.
Next, you have serotonin decreases, and that can be linked to mood and appetite, which low levels can cause fixation on the beloved, similar to obsessive compulsive disorder. You could think about your partner constantly, even during work or important tasks. It can also result in neglecting personal responsibilities and interest. When we're in love, like, we don't want to sleep as much, and our appetite changes, which, if our appetite changes and we don't eat, then we don't have the precursors or the stuff that we need to produce serotonin. Mm-hmm. And so our serotonin drops. Within our serotonin drops, we can be more anxious. We're anxious that, oh, the person hasn't called us. Mm-hmm. We may be distracted. And we know low levels of serotonin are linked to things such as paranoia and obsessive compulsive disorder. So anxiety and even suicidal thoughts. So being in a bad relationship and caught up in this chemical stew can do some devastating things to us. What else do we have here? The oxytocin and vasopressin rise in our body will facilitate bonding and reinforce the brain's reward system. It will help give us a feeling of deep connection and trust during intimate moments. It can help strengthen long-term relationships and promotes emotional security. So here, this looks like it's not that much of a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Just know that this is happening, right? So I think the oxytocin is not so bad. Oh, but what happens when the dopamine gets thrown into our body? What happens when all the pleasure's happening? Guess what? The amygdala deactivates. It reduces the fear response, making individuals feel safer. The feeling happens that we feel unusually confident and secure with our partner, and we're willing to take risks. You can result in overlooking potential dangers or unhealthy aspects of the relationship. So this was one where it's like your amygdala shuts down or reduces its fear-producing qualities.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll take more risks. It's like when you are, you know, why do people cheat? And part of it is maybe they have this chemical feeling of, oh, I'm so excited. I have this lust. I have this attraction for this other person. But now their amygdala, their fear of getting caught has been reduced. Their serotonin's dropped. And maybe they just feel anxious, like they got to be with this new person. Mm-hmm. And their frontal cortex or prefrontal cortex shuts down.
Yeah.
So they're not thinking straight, and they don't actually know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They may feel they know what they're doing, but they may not know what they're doing.
Be careful with the love.
Be careful. The frontal cortex deactivates, which reduces critical thinking. It can cause blindness to potential red flags. You can ignore early warning signs of problematic behaviors because you're infatuated. And at the beginning of the show, we talked about unhealthy relationships.
Yeah.
That you don't see the red flags. Your family, your friends, they may be saying, hey, you know, this is what we see. This is what's going on. And you're like, you get angry at them. Or yeah, like, yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So the people are completely blind. And it's difficult. I have many friends. They come in talking with me about, oh, I feel like that. And and I see you see this red flag. Yes, but I have maybe 7 red flags and 1 green here in the corner. But she pointing the green
that's
one.
So good.
This is enough.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about love. How do I know I'm in love? How do I know it's a good relationship? How do I know it's healthy?
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're about to talk about, can I be in love with 2 people or more?
Or 3.
Who knows? Let's see. So what is romantic love with 2 people? Oh my gosh, yes, it's possible to feel romantic love for 2 people simultaneously due to complex emotions and individual differences. But there are problems with this belief. There is conflict and confusion. It can create an emotional turmoil and difficulty in making decisions. It also creates divided attention. It can lead to feelings of neglect or inadequacy in partners. Now, is it actually fair to your partners? Can you be open and honest with both of them? Are you hiding the relationship from both of them?
So right now, suppose it's the new style of relationship. People is open and feel that that is okay if we allow everybody in the same party.
and thinking about this, is it really a love relationship if you're not being open and honest? So now I understand you saying, today they're like, hey, we're going to be seeing other people. We'll talk about who else we're seeing. We're going to be really, and it can be you're having a relationship, but I don't think you're having, from my point of view, I don't think you're having a love relationship. You're just, you're going out with friends and it's like everyone's, not everyone. Okay, we're going to have an open relationship. Okay, we have an open relationship as long as you tell me. And as long as you don't get jealous and I don't get jealous, it's okay. But as soon as you start to have these attraction feelings, lust, maybe you can get away with it because you think you can handle it. But as soon as you start having the attraction feelings and you start feeling anxiety and you start feeling obsessive, I don't know that this is going to actually work that well. Nature says millions of years of evolution have put us in a chemical bath of feeling anxious, having anxiety, having obsession when we move into the attraction stage of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. But let's see what else we found about. So how about if you want to select which one you should be with? Assess the compatibility. Evaluate long-term goals, values, and emotional connection. Consider the stability of the relationship. Think about who provides more stable and supportive relationship. Understand your own needs and desires deeply. Have some fairness to your partners and yourself. Transparency. Can you be honest in communication? That would be essential. That would help avoid feelings of betrayal. Emotional impact. Weigh the emotional cost on all involved, including yourself. Respect and integrity. Ensure actions align with ethical considerations and mutual respect. Now, I come from a school of, okay, I've had numerous relationships, but I haven't had simultaneous relationships. I've been in a relationship where the other person had 2 people that they were dating.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was really anxiety producing because now you're in competition with the other person.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about that.
Yes. So from the person I was dating's aspect, mm-hmm. maybe it was very easy because they were just trying to make a decision between 2 people. They liked them both. But from the person on my side, mm-hmm. where I knew there was another person competing, and it wasn't like I wanted them to have another relationship. It was anxiety producing.
Yeah.
And now they were honest and said, hey, I'm seeing someone else also.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really tough. So I'm going to tell you out there, if you have 2 relationships, know that from the standpoint of the person who is one of the 2,
mm-hmm.
to me, that was very anxious.
Yeah.
You know, and are you open and honest with the people?
And be careful if you believe that you win, because maybe you lose.
Ah, yeah, you might lose both, right?
No, you believe you,
oh, yeah. So that's the point is, if you're one of the two people who are dating the one person, and you then feel this anxious anxiety of the competition, and you're a very competitive person too, you then try to win the relationship. And then if you win the relationship, as Lizette said, maybe you lose because you were so chemically induced into trying to pursue the relationship. It may not have actually been a good relationship because you rushed to win it rather than took your time to be in it.
And after 2 years, maybe you are in the same position.
No,
compared with other guy that tried to be there. Yeah.
So from an evolutionary perspective, it can be evolutionary consistent. Increases the genetic diversity by having more than one partner, you can increase the genetic diversity and survival chances of offspring. Human evolution, historically humans have practiced both monogamy and polygamy, depending on cultural and social contexts. So it's not out of the question, as has it been normal and usual for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So how about mammals? Here are a couple of mammals that are monogamous. Wolves, they form strong pair bonds and co-parent pups together. Beavers work together to build and maintain their lodges and raise their young. Gibbons live in family groups with strong pair bonds. And swans often cited as symbols of lifelong partnership and loyalty. Mm-hmm. So, key takeaway, while some mammals are naturally monogamous, human romantic relationships are diverse and influenced by a mix of biological, social, and personal factors. So sometimes we are as society is.
Yeah.
Because if all of a sudden society feels this is the way to go, then you're ostracized. If you're the only one who wants to have a monogamous relationship and everyone else is having multiple relationships, then you are ostracized.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't want you.
You are weird.
You're weird. If you don't want to have multiple relationships, I don't want a relationship with you. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of weird. Huh? So love at first sight, there's some benefits to that. And we want to talk about that real quick, that quick attraction can lead to a faster mating opportunity, increasing chances of passing on genes. So the humans have been set up to believe in and feel like we can have love at first sight. And a lot of times that's lust at first sight. Rapid attachment could enhance survival. Is it real? It's mixed evidence. Some people report experiencing love at first sight, while others see it as an intense initial attraction that kind of goes away. It may be influenced by idealization and strong emotional reactions. So it can be a lot more chemical than it is like a real metaphysical or spiritual thing. I'm going to go into the benefits of love. Are there benefits?
Yes, a lot.
A couple of benefits to love. Emotional support and stability. It provides a source of comfort, understanding, and emotional security by having a partner to share life's ups and downs, reducing stress and anxiety. It improves your physical health. Engaging in a loving relationship is associated with better health, such as low blood pressure, stronger immune system, and longer lifespan. Personal growth and happiness. We talked about our brains being intertwined, but romantic relationships can enhance self-esteem and personal development through encouragement and support from partner that can motivate, from your partner that can motivate pursuing goals and achieving personal growth. So there's a motivation and support factor in a relationship that's beneficial to your health. The prefrontal cortex issue we talked about, that it gets shut down during lust stage, bad decisions are made, you can't see the red flags in front of your eyes. Just a reminder of that again is that sometimes when we have that lust, we really shut off thinking about, are we doing the right thing? When logic returns, right? 2 years later, logic returns, mm-hmm. And now you've got re-engagement of consciousness. You have rebound thinking. Your thinking's bounced back. You're like, oh, here it is again. Comparisons and contrasts. You start looking at things that you weren't looking at before. You look at the red flags versus the green flags. You now start looking at self-protection. And when you start logically thinking, and I'm in this relationship, wait, if I'm in this relationship, all other options are off the table. Mm-hmm. And now you start thinking about that, is this really what I want to be in, right? Are we addicted to love? And interesting enough is there are addiction similarities in love. Chemicals involved. Both love and drugs activate dopamine, creating feelings of pleasure and reward. The brain locations for this, the brain's reward system, particularly the ventral tegmental area, and that's VTA, and nucleus accumbens, is involved in both love and drug addiction. The sharing of similar neurochemical pathways highlights the powerful effect of dopamine on human behavior. So love addiction can cause you to obsessively think about a romantic partner, craving their presence. And that is similar to how addicts crave their substance. People in love crave their partner due to dopamine spikes. The brain picture showing you there is the deep part of the brain where this is active. It's really deep in the brain. It's not a lot of the stuff that we're learning. Our brains kind of grow outward as we learn more and more that we're creating more and more synapses and neurons further away from the core. So some of these things, these addictive behaviors, are innate to us. Mm-hmm. They're very, very natural and so very easily taken advantage of. Let's get to the end of this here, I think. We want to talk about love at a distance. We had a couple of things here. So I wanted to know is why people who may not be living with their partner seem to have long relationships.
Because we don't have to deal in the routine.
You don't have to deal with routine problems of every day. Mm-hmm. And they're extended out. So instead of having a problem every day of the week, it might be this week one, next week the other. You skip a week and another. And so you don't have a condensation of problems. And here are some of the things that we learned about that. Is you can look at timeline or geographic distance. You can look at results of absence. Absence, having the heart grow fonder. You have limited interactions. The infrequent meetings prevent daily routine and minor conflicts that often temper initial romantic excitement. It allows the intensity of the lust stage to remain high for a longer period of time. Idealization, because they're not with you, you have less frequent contact, which can lead to an idealized image of the partner, as there are fewer opportunities to see the flaws and everyday realities of their personality and behavior. In fact, you remember all the good things, right? And then there is anticipation and excitement. They're not there. You have this obsession for them to be there. And then when they come, I think you made this comment, is that the intimacy, the passion, the sexual activity is so much more amplified because there is the time and there is the delay.
You have to be careful too, because if you live in this then also you can make a gap in your life and maybe somebody can be with you.
Yeah, because if you do have that gap in time, that allows both of you to have gaps in times of seeing other people.
Yeah, exactly.
And then maybe somebody jumps in.
Yeah, so it has to be careful.
You do. So how do we leave the group with today? What are we going to leave our audience with? How about this? Ensuring consummate love with your partner. Whether you have a partner or are going to have a partner, focus on these things. There's three things we want to talk about. The neuroplasticity and shared life experiences. Your brain will grow together and strengthen the neural connections. Couples who build a life together develop the intertwined neural pathways, enhancing empathy and understanding, as well as an interdependent relationship where deep connection and communication is possible. Mm-hmm. They learn the same language by developing the same brain in some areas.
And the same soul.
The same soul. Mm-hmm. The chemical interactions and commitment is focus on developing more of the chemistry that helps bond you together. Release oxytocin and vasopressin in your daily life by holding each other, caressing each other, kissing each other, being in bonding activities. It will enhance trust, security, and attachment between the partners. And lastly, so what are the action steps? Foster growth together, engage in shared experiences to strengthen neural connection, promote bonding activities, increases the oxytocin and vasopressin through physical affection and supportive actions, and finally, explore deeper connections together, cultivate a spiritual bond through meaningful conversations and shared values. Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to do. We hope that you do that with your current or...
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.